Last case for argument, United States v. Henderson. Mr. Schief.
That's Chaffee, Your Honor. Good morning.
Sorry,
that's okay. Good morning, Your Honors. In this case, the district court clearly erred when it prohibited Mr. Henderson from introducing the out-of-court statement of Dexter Rogers pursuant to 804B3. The issue before the court, or I should say the parties agreed below, that Mr. Rogers was unavailable pursuant to 804B3 and that the statement, out-of-court statement, was against his penal interest.
I understand everybody agreed on that, but in our new world of Second Amendment rights, it's not entirely clear to me how it was against his penal interest to say he had found the gun on the street and was taking it home.
Well, Your Honor, Mr. Rogers was convicted.
Oh, he also had a felony?
So he was a prior felon.
Ah, okay. That answers my question. Thank you. Okay.
But the problem I have with your position is there's no dispute that the gun was actually found wedged between the seat and the back of the seat of the driver, of Henderson. And if that's true, even if everything Rogers said was true, Henderson possessed it.
Well, I think 2 points, Your Honor. I think that was a dispute at trial of where the gun was actually found.
These were bucket seats or a bench?
They were bucket seats. It was the driver's and the driver's seat. I think the testimony from the police officers was that the gun was under the back seat cover of the driver's seat. And so, Your Honor, that was in dispute at trial about whether the gun was actually found. The officers...
But dispute or not, it was resolved in favor of the government, and it would have been regardless of what Rogers said, right? Because even if the gun came into the car brought there by Rogers, if he gives it to Henderson, then Henderson possesses it.
Well, I think the question is whether Mr. Henderson put the gun under the back seat cover.
Well, your statement of fact says that the officer claims he saw the butt of the gun sticking out of the seam between the seat and seat back on the driver's side of the van.
Yes.
Between the seam and the seat back. That's right where the driver's posterior would have been.
That's right next to him. That's correct, John.
Okay. Okay.
But what came out of trial was that no officer saw Mr. Henderson possess the firearm or have the firearm in his hand or in his possession. The testimony was there was some...
They saw him reaching back to that area near his posterior where the gun was found.
That was the officer's testimony. Right. That is correct, John. Okay.
But are you contesting that the gun was found on that seat?
We're not making an insufficiency argument, Your Honor. So we're contesting just whether the district court clearly erred in not allowing Mr. Rogers.
I'm just trying to figure out the materiality of Rogers' testimony. If it's conceded that the gun was found on Henderson's seat, whether it was wedged in or not wedged or what have you, how would Rogers' testimony bear on that?
Well, Your Honor, at trial, in one sense, that the jury came back a different way. But at trial, that was in dispute, and that was challenged. There was evidence put on by Mr. Henderson to show or to support the fact that it would have been virtually impossible for the police officers to see what they said they saw. There were facts that came out at trial.
What was Henderson's theory at trial? There was a gun. There was a gun.
There was, Your Honor.
So what is Henderson's theory at trial as to where the gun was found? Did he argue that he thought the police had found it somewhere else in the car, or did he just deny that it was on his seat, or what?
Your Honor, our argument at trial was that the gun wasn't found where the police officers say it was found. And that was supported, we believe, by the evidence.
But you thought it was found in the car.
We do believe once...
Do you think it was on Roger's person? Is that the idea? In his pocket or something?
Well, we didn't know where the gun was found as opposed to whether it was just in the van, somewhere in the van, or on Rogers' person.
And all Rosado's testimony would have been, with respect to that, is that he would have said Rogers told him he put it in the van. He took the gun into the van.
That he found the gun, that he brought it to the van, and that...
It didn't include details about where he put it in the van, right?
Well, Your Honor, we believe that if we would have been able to put Mr. Rosado on, that we would have been able to brought out more about the statement. But just on the record...
Did you proffer that to the district court, that there was more detail in Rosado's statement?
We did not. We did not, John. So just on...
And Rosado purportedly got this information when he was at the jail visit with Mr.
Rogers,
right?
He did.
Did you introduce documents to show that Rosado had actually gone to the jail in the time frame that this statement was made?
Well, we didn't, Your Honor. That
would have corroborated Rosado's view or a statement, wouldn't it?
It would have, Your Honor. The circumstances of Rosado coming to the defense lot, this statement coming to defense, was from Mr. Rosado's being interviewed by the ATF agents.
Right. Right.
I think 3 or 4 days, maybe a week before trial. We weren't able to corroborate it by looking at the jail records to see did Mr. Rosado visit Mr. Rogers.
Should we take into account the timing of Mr. Rosado's statement here? If I understand it correctly, he came forward with this information after repeated conversations with both defense and prosecution investigators and after his grand jury testimony. And all if this actually happened, it would seem odd not to have mentioned it until a few days before trial.
Well, Your Honor, here's what I will say to that, is that Mr. Rosado was interviewed by the government a number of times. During the discussion on this issue before the district court, it was brought out that Mr. Rosado did tell the government that he discussed with Mr. Rogers about the drugs and guns found in the van. Now, he didn't say that Mr. Rogers told him that it was his gun and that he had brought it to the van.
He testified to the grand jury that he had no idea how the gun got in his van, right?
That's true. And it's clear that Mr. Rosado himself did make conflicting statements. But we don't believe that the declarant, which is the statement that Mr. Henderson was trying to enter to evidence, the declarant's statements were conflicting at all. So it is clear that Mr. Rosado made a statement at the grand jury and made a statement during an interview that was inconsistent with his later statement to the ATF.
Right. So that's clear. So why isn't that a pretty good reason to say we really don't have sufficient corroboration that this actually happened?
Well, we know that Mr. Rogers was in the van, had access.
No, that the statement happened.
Beg your pardon, Your Honor?
Why can't we take into account this very delayed statement, the inconsistent statements, as undermining the trustworthiness of Mr. Rosado's testimony?
Well, we believe, Your Honor, that it's not Mr. Rosado's testimony that goes to the corroboration of that needs to be corroborated. that it's the declarant statement, Mr. Rogers' statement, the hearsay statement, that that needs to be corroborated or have some indication of trustworthiness. Mr. Rosado, the government could have, and I presumably would have on cross-examination, impeached him with his prior inconsistent statements. And so we believe that the district court, should have been looking at Mr. Rogers' statement, looking at were there circumstances that indicate some trustworthiness with regards.
Well, okay, he did that, though, didn't he? Didn't he say, who finds a gun on the streets of Chicago fully loaded with a round in the chambers? It sounded, well, the story itself sounded pretty incredible.
Well, we submit it sounded incredible to the district court.
And he has to evaluate the trustworthiness, right?
Yes, but
in determining admissibility.
That's true, Your Honor, but we believe the fact that an individual finds a gun on the street of Chicago in of itself isn't implausible. And so just the court just relying on the fact that Mr. Rogers said he found a firearm on the streets of Chicago in of itself doesn't mean that the statement on his face was incredible. And
I suppose that did happen on Michigan this summer, didn't it?
It unfortunately
dropped out of somebody's pants.
It unfortunately happens in Chicago, Your Honor. I see that my time is up. I reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Schieffer. Ms. Kastanek?
May it please this court, Andriana Kastanek arguing on behalf of the United States government. The district court did not abuse its discretion in holding that this hearsay statement was not corroborated. There could hardly be less corroboration than there was of Dexter Rogers' purported statement to Alberto Rosado. There was not a single bit of evidence in this record that indicated that, first, the statement was actually made, or, second, that that statement was true. We're talking about the word of a single witness, uncorroborated by any evidence in the record. This is quintessential hearsay. Even if the district court were to have abused its discretion, however, in excluding this evidence, it is not material to these issues. It is not exculpatory as governed by Rule 804b3. As the court noted in its questions to Mr. Schieffer,
to be exculpatory, does it have to be conclusively so?
I think it needs to be mutually exclusive with what the jury found at trial. So in this case, the statement of Mr. Rogers purportedly was he found a gun on the street and he was going to bring it home that night. He didn't even say that he brought it into the van that night. He didn't say that he possessed it at the time of the traffic stop. The government's evidence at trial was that at the time that the defendant's van was stopped, CPD approached on both sides. They saw the defendant reaching behind him. They ordered him out of the car, and they found a gun on the seat where the defendant was sitting. The jury didn't hear any evidence of the history of the gun or the ownership of the gun or who was going to bring it home that night because those issues are legally irrelevant to whether the defendant possessed that gun at the time of that traffic stop. That's what the jury found in finding him guilty.
Under 804b3, the support by corroborating circumstances, does that go to the trustworthiness of the witness testifying, the declarant who made the statement out of court?
Yes, Your Honor. I think it goes to both. So this court has said that the purpose of the corroboration requirement is to prevent fabrication. So in some cases, the risk of the fabrication may only be in whether that statement is true. So, for example, a witness tells law enforcement about something, and then the government or the defendant is going to call that law enforcement officer to relay the statement. There might not be a risk of fabrication with respect to whether the statement was actually made in those circumstances. Here, however, there's two levels of a risk of fabrication. There's whether the statement was made by Dexter Rogers, and then there's another level of whether, if the statement was made, whether Dexter Rogers was telling the truth. So as the district court concluded, it needs to look at both of those, Rosado's truthfulness and Roger's truthfulness. And at both levels, there's no corroboration. Pending other questions from the panel, I would ask that the district, or this court, affirm the judgment to the district court.
Thank you very much.
Actually, I did have a question. Sorry. Looked to me, just from reading the defendant's brief, that the Hatfield and Garcia cases were their strongest cases. I didn't see any response at all from the government.
Yes, Your Honor. I think that this case is different. Let me just take one moment to look here. Garcia, the court specifically finds that the statement of the court in that case is that there was some other evidence to corroborate the statement. I don't think that that can be said of this case. There is nothing that the defendant could point to at the district court level to corroborate either Rosado's statement or Roger's statement.
I agree that there are probably grounds for distinguishing them. I'm simply trying to suggest that such points ought to be made in the directly responsive brief rather than overlooking the authority the defense offers as its strongest authority.
Yes, Your Honor. I will keep that in mind. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you, Ms. Castaner. So, Mr. Shife, do you have anything further?
Your Honor, in Garcia, this court stated that the rule on the 804b3 is not that the hearsay statement itself is true, only that there's just some circumstance to indicate that it could be. There, we believe, are circumstances in this case to indicate that Mr. Rogers' declarant statement could be true. Mr. Rogers was in the van that night.
As Judge Posner pointed out, it could be true, and your client could still have possessed the gun under the way it was found.
Yes, but, Your Honor, I think if we look at this court's holding in Robinson that came out earlier this summer, we have to not just look at the evidence itself alone or what the jury would have thought about the evidence, but look at that excluded evidence in line with all the other evidence in the case.
But would the Rogers statement really have undermined the government's case? For one thing, if he gets into the van and says, look, I just found this nice gun, but suppose he doesn't give it to Henderson, Henderson would still be in constructive possession of it. Right? He's driving a van. He knows there's a person who just found a gun on the street in his car. I'm not certain, but there would be an argument.
You'd have more room for to argue with that than with the version. Didn't Mr. Henderson also, according to officers, admit that it was his gun?
He did, of course, at office, Your Honor, but in Robinson, where this court found that it wasn't harmless error, the defendant made two statements to two different police officers. Mm-hmm. And so we believe that we should look at the excluded evidence along with all the other evidence in the case and not just see in a vacuum how this evidence would have played. Or not.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Schieffer. Thank the defenders for their efforts on behalf of their clients. And the court will be in recess.